I have been criminally charged for voicing my deeply held beliefs that are based on classical Christianity.
Finnish lawmaker Dr. Pavi Rossinen, speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
If this kind of questioning of free speech is possible in a country like Finland, which has a long roots in Christian culture and values and good reputation regarding free speech internationally, the same could be possible anywhere.
You can watch and listen to Dr. Päivi Räsänen making the case for Christians in the public square from the 2022 Making the Case conference. For a $300 gift by Labor Day, you can access an on-demand video stream or podcast of the entire conference. Order today at issuesetc.org or by giving us a call, 618-223-8385. I would say it was a decisive victory, but it was a long time coming. The pro-life community is known for its courage. It's also known for its patience. Well, are some of the tactics employed by the pro-life movement useful in other fronts as well? Other fronts that would defend the rights of children? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about pro-life tactics in defense of natural marriage, Katie Fausch. She's founder and director of the children's rights organization Them Before Us, co-author of the book also called Them Before Us, and a recent column for The Federalist titled Defenders of Traditional Marriage Should Follow the Pro-Life Playbook. Katie, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
How did both the Roe ruling and the Obergefell ruling that gave us nationwide same-sex marriage, how did they both damage the rights of children?
Well, I think most of your listeners can obviously name how the decision in Roe damaged children's rights, and that is that it violated their right to life. It determined that if a child was unwanted, a parent could force them out of existence through abortion. Obergefell, the legalization of gay marriage, also violated children's rights, but in a way that was not as immediately obvious. And that is that Obergefell violated children's right to their mother and father, because marriage, the public purpose of marriage, is actually parenthood. And that when you make husbands and wives optional in marriage, you make mothers and fathers optional in parenthood. And so we saw that very quickly within 2 years after Obergefell was passed. The Supreme Court heard a case called Pavon that allowed two married women to both be named parents on a child's birth certificate, in essence saying that the person you're married to can be the other parent of your child, so legally erasing the child's father. And so now we have seen that across the country, that you will be hard-pressed to find any government, federal institution that even recognizes that children should have a mother and father, because gay marriage has functionally made that a discriminatory statement. So both of these, at its heart, violated the natural rights of children.
Why does the state have an interest in marriage?
So it's so fascinating. Back when we nationally recognized DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, Congress made it very clear why the government had an interest in marriage, and that is that it has an interest in children. That is the public purpose of marriage, not to validate your deeply held feelings and bonds for another adult. The reason government is interested in marriage is because it is the only institution that brings together a child's mother and father. And interestingly, today, I believe right at this minute in the House, they are seeking to strike down DOMA out of fear that the wobbly legs of Obergefell might collapse. And then we will have to go back to some of these laws that we have on the books, recognizing mothers and fathers. So DOMA tells the truth that marriage exists to unite a child's two parents together in lifelong union.
How are arguments for abortion and arguments for same-sex marriage similar?
Well, I think that most of us are pretty familiar with the pro-choice talking points, right? That it's my body, my choice, or I'm not really ready to parent, or this is not what I want for my life. It's going to get in the way of my career or my education or whatever. All of those talking points really have to do with adult feelings and adult desires. And those desires and feelings are elevated above a child's right to life. And so in that sense, I think all of us have faced those kinds of conversations and questions from our friends that support abortion. Similarly, the case around Obergefell and gay marriage centered around adult desires and adult feelings. Well, this is the person that I love. Well, this is with whom I share commitment. And well, I've had a really hard life so far and I want to be able to have a family. And I didn't know if I could ever come out and be my true self with the world. And so both of these conversations tend to focus almost obsessively on adult desire and adult feelings. And the problem is that when we allow those two debates to be dominated by adult wants, children are the casualties.
So how can those seeking a pro-marriage culture emulate pro-life tactics?
So what the pro-life movement did so well is they recentered the debate. They empathized with women in unplanned pregnancies. They mourned with women who got devastating diagnoses. They came alongside and wanted to support people who needed diapers and parenting classes. I mean, we built an entire infrastructure of pregnancy resource centers to empathize and support adults. But no matter what the adults were going through, we unflinchingly said, you cannot violate a child's right to life. And that is exactly where the pro-marriage movement needs to go. We need to empathize with adults who experience same-sex attraction because many of them really have genuinely suffered personally in their lives. We need to empathize with adults in struggling marriages because this is some of the hardest things that adults are going to go through. We need to empathize with the single women or single men who desperately want to be parents but haven't found Mr. or Mrs. Right. We need to empathize with adults who are struggling in all kinds of relationship and romantic ways, but none of that adult struggle, sadness, loss, or feelings ever justify separating a child from their mother or father. And so that is where we need to go. We need to constantly recenter the debate about marriage away from adult desires, away from adult feelings, and on the very real, concrete, natural law, foundational reality that children have a mother and father. They long for that mother and father. They deserve their mother and father, and they have a right to that mother and father. And so the conversation about marriage needs to be what the pro-life world did, and that is say, these children have rights. We are here to defend them.
How do you respond in a child-centered way to an argument like opposition to gay marriage is just like opposition to interracial marriage?
Yeah, and you know, the pro-life world has done this very well because all of us know that the other side likes to appeal to edge cases, right, to difficult cases, to try to wedge in the larger issue. And so I think that people that are advocating for marriage must also be adept at handling these edge cases. So the one that you just brought up is, well, if you're against gay marriage, you must be against interracial marriage. And focusing on a child-centric response to all of these different questions is going to be very helpful. So the child-centric response to that is, children who have a black father and a white mother don't lose anything. They have two rich heritages, and they have the maternal and paternal love that they crave. Children who are raised by two men lose one of their heritages, 50% of their lineage, 50% of their extended family, and they lose one biological adult to whom they have a natural right and the maternal love that they crave. And so, in essence, gay marriage and interracial marriage do the exact opposite. One unites a child's two parents, and the other one separates a child's two parents.
What about the argument, if you really think family is so important, then you must be against divorce?
The answer is correct. Correct. And this is a place where the pro-marriage world has faltered somewhat. We have not taken as strong of a stance against no-fault divorce. There are cases where divorce may be necessary, but it is like an amputation. It is like what we need to do as a last resort to stop the spread of the gangrene if there is a situation of abuse, addiction, abandonment, adultery. But we need to take a much harsher stance away from no-fault divorce, casual divorce, divorce just for the sake of irreconcilable differences, or we've fallen out of love, or, wow, my secretary looks really good today, and my wife has gained a few too many pounds. I mean, we need to legally and culturally take a much stronger stand against divorce, because that is also part of rebuilding a marriage culture and regaining some of our credibility when it comes to being pro-child in the marriage debate.
It's often argued that children don't need mom and dads. They just need to be safe and to be loved. How do you respond to that?
Well, the answer is that we've been studying family structure for decades, and statistically, we actually know the kind of household that most ensures that a child will be safe and loved, and it is the home of their married, biological mother and father. Any other family structure that steps away from that, single mother, mother and boyfriend, dad and stepmom, two dads, two moms, any other family structure increases a child's likelihood of abuse and neglect. And so if you genuinely believe that children should be safe and loved, then you believe in marriage. You believe that children's rights to their mother and father and should be honored, and that they need them both for life, and they only get that through marriage.
So why is it important to adopt the pro-life's, you say, a two-pronged tactic of changing both hearts and laws?
So the pro-life world did this so well. When I'm on social media, when I'm kind of reading through comments, or I follow my pro-life leaders that I think have done such a great job of making the cultural case for life, what I see is sometimes people will come on and argue against it with some of those pro-choice talking points. And there's an army of pro-lifers that get on, and they can rebut those claims, right? They can respond to that. They have a lot of experience, information, and stories to help them combat some of those pro-choice talking points. And so the cultural change matters. Those conversations change hearts. We do need to have a compelling cultural witness on these issues, and that's critical. But we also need savvy legal minds who are finding ways to figure out how do we, and this was terribly difficult before Dobbs, right? Because even as savvy as you were legally, there was this big wall that we ran up against when it came to Roe versus Wade. And we similarly are going to find similar things with Obergefell, right? We can make efforts, and I pray that we do. I pray that we find policymakers and lawyers who can figure out creative ways to incentivize men committing to the women they are making babies with before they make those babies and keep them together for life. That is the public purpose of marriage. And we need crafty, creative legislation and policies to encourage that so that at some point we can have our Dobbs moment, even with traditional marriage, where we go, you know what? An unjust law is no law at all. And this actually was a poorly decided decision, right? As Clarence Thomas elucidates in his concurrence. And so we need to stay in it with the good fight culturally and legally, because both Roe versus Wade and Obergefell contradict natural law. And as my friend Doug Mainwaring says, you'll never be on the wrong side of history when you're on the right side of natural law. And so we need to just have the patience of the pro-life movement and stay in the fight and seek to change both hearts and laws.
Finally, how do you respond to someone who says, I'm with you, Katie, but I'm afraid of being labeled as homophobic or anti-gay?
I would say, welcome to the club. Every single person that I know worries about that same thing, because all of us have friends who identify as gay or lesbian. And hopefully you love them more than anyone else. That is my, if you're a biblical Christian, you should. You should be the most loving and sacrificial person in their life. And so you may incur those kinds of insults or accusations. Your gay and lesbian friends, the ones that really know you, should say, there's no way. She loves me better than anyone else. He would sacrifice. He has sacrificed. He's helped me move in the middle of winter, right? So those kinds of accusations are going to come. Let your LGBT friends in your life, above all, know that it's a lie, because you've proved otherwise.
Katie Faust is founder and director of the children's rights organization, Them Before Us. She's co-author of the book also called Them Before Us, and a recent column for The Federalist titled Defenders of Traditional Marriage Should Follow the Pro-Life Playbook. You can read it and purchase Them Before Us at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Katie, thank you.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Dr. Kevin Golden joins us on the other side of the break. If you are passingly familiar with the book of Genesis, you know that it begins with, well, not one, but two creation accounts, one in Genesis chapter 1 and the other in Genesis chapter 2. How are they similar? How are they different? And above all, do they contradict one another?
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
The images of the war in Ukraine that have filled our screens over the last few months have left many people wondering, how do we address this as Lutherans? How do we think about war? How does the church, or can the church, speak to the state at such a time? Well, if you've asked such questions, you need to pick up the June-July issue of the Lutheran Witness. There we ask and answer these very questions. To find out more, visit cph.org/witness or our website, witness.lcms.org. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
We desire for all Christian children, including those with learning or behavior challenges, to receive a strong education in the faith. At simplyclassical.com, you will find reading, penmanship, and copybook exercises based on the truth, wisdom, and comfort of God's Word. We include Aesop's fables and classic children's literature, math, and science, all from Memoria Press. Use promo code LPR22 at simplyclassical.com.
Not everyone is comfortable with new technology. Dial A Podcast gives all generations of your congregation an easy way to hear your sermons, or even devotionals and Bible studies. Once you've completed a simple one-time setup, we take care of the rest. All your congregants have to do is dial the number from any phone to listen to your latest podcast, all at no additional cost to them. Dial A Podcast. Extend the reach of your sermons. Get started at dialapodcast.com now.